Before we begin this podcast, I'd like to tell you about a special deal. Subscribe today to The Spectator for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with, here's the magic bit, a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one, because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life.
I'm Matt McDonald, in for Freddie Gray this week. And I'm speaking to Todd Bentzman, who is a senior national security fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies. We're going to be discussing what's perceived as Kamala Harris's flip-flop on the bipartisan border bill. So last week at the DNC, Kamala Harris said, "After decades in law enforcement, I know the importance of safety and security, especially at our border. Last year, Joe and I brought together Democrats and conservative Republicans to write the strongest border bill in decades. The Border Patrol endorsed it, but Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign, so he ordered his allies in Congress to kill a deal. Well, I refuse to play politics with our security, and here is my pledge to you. As president, I will bring back the bipartisan border security bill that he killed, and I will sign it into law. I know we can live up to our proud heritage as a nation of immigrants and reform our broken immigration system. We can create an earned pathway to citizenship and secure our border." Now, Todd, the last time you were on, you said of that bill, "It's a great thing that it died, and I'm embarrassed on their behalf." Could you recap what was wrong with that the Lankford-Murphy border bill?
Senate Republicans were snookered because they just don't understand immigration policy, and they never reached out to anyone from my organization or any prior administration officials that understand the border and illegal immigration. Current law, as set forth in the Immigration and Nationality Act, requires zero crossings. That's the goal. Nobody gets across. It requires detention if anybody does, and then it requires removal proceedings. So it's a 0-0-0 sum game under current law approved by Congress. What this one would do is replace the zero with 1.8 million crossings allowed. Of course, reasonable minds finally stepped forward and said, "Yeah, no way. That is just a non-starter right at the beginning. We're not doing that." And then that's before supposed enforcement would start, but the bill made it discretionary. You don't have to enforce. You could enforce after 1.8 million. That's 5,000 a day, by the way, in Boston. So, of course, Harris and her liberal progressive friends love this bill. This is the best thing that could have ever happened, to be able to replace the INA with something that codifies open borders. That's the problem with it.
Kamala said in her CNN interview, which she finally gave this Thursday, she said, you know, talked up again that some of the most conservative members, right, were on board with this bill, which I presume she's referring to Senator James Lankford. And I presume that she's talking more about kind of his positions on social issues rather than anything to do with immigration. Like, why is that a kind of false argument, if you will?
Right, because Lankford is not an immigration expert. He knows nothing about it. Neither do the others that cut this deal. Those senators luckily had their betters come in behind them and clean up their mess. And also, I'd point out that those senators handed the Harris administration, or campaign rather, the Biden administration, this cudgel with which to beat the Republicans over the head. They should be ashamed for doing that. The Lankford and his crowd are in a tiny minority of Republicans who don't know what they're doing.
Let's say you were advising the you know, incoming Harris administration on the border and on how to kind of stem this flow of immigration. What do you think common sense, moderate border policy would look like?
Sure. I'm offering my services to Harris administration officially here. But I won't hold my breath. The Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration has already shown it does not need any sort of new legislation to shut down illegal crossings. In December, knowing that the polling was terrible and that there was a big election coming up in November, Biden went down to Mexico and cut a deal, just simple diplomacy with the president of Mexico to have them shut the border down with Guatemala and to hold back the tide in southern Mexico. They deployed 35,000 troops as part of this deal to scrape clean all the northern border areas with our border and to ship tens of thousands of immigrants 1,500 miles to the south and trap them down there behind militarized roadblocks in a kind of a Gaza Strip. There's probably 100,000 of them they've got blocked up down there and more coming all the time. And all it took was a trip one day in December to cut that deal, a couple of trips. And that was just a piece of diplomacy. Now the numbers crossing the border, at least through November 5th, are the lowest that they've been since the Trump administration. So this thing about, you know, we need legislation is ridiculous. All you need is what Trump was doing and what the Biden administration is now doing with Mexico and, for that matter, with Panama. And then to use a couple of other Trump-era policies in addition to that, remain in Mexico, which would push back immigrants and force them to pursue their asylum claims in Mexico. Nobody's coming for the great Mexican dream. They're coming to be released into the U.S. for their asylum claims, which they'll all lose, but they'll be here. And you've pretty much sewed the border up. Then just apply the law, the INA that I was just talking about a minute ago, and you can shut that border down. But then you have the other problem of 10 million people that crossed in the meantime and are inside the United States, driving city after city toward bankruptcy.
So in terms of the difference between Biden's approach to the border versus Trump, and in terms of what they, how they, I think, view the power of the office of the presidency, Biden obviously was a long time creature of the Senate before he then served as vice president. And I feel like if he was trying to defend himself, he would say, well, I wanted to give legislators who the chance to legislate the border rather than sweep in with an executive action, which obviously, you know, both the Obama administration and the Trump administration were criticized for their use of EOs to solve problems that Congress should be solving. Would you buy that as an argument if he made that to you? Or do you think that that would just be an excuse?
Right. No, the issue at hand is the degree to which an executive applies current law to the border. There's nothing wrong with current law. There is no need for comprehensive reform. There is a need for a few tweaks, mainly in the asylum law. And there's a couple of legal loopholes, but that is not major comprehensive reform. What's happening is that the Biden administration on the very first day decided that it would not apply existing law, meaning detention and deportation, to the border. They would throw it out and ignore it almost entirely. And that's what they did from the very first day, and create parallel systems to what they call increase humane, orderly, and safe mass migration. In other words, not to stop, block, and deter, but the official policy became orderly migration over the border, which is just unprecedented. No American executive, Democrat or Republican, has ever done something like this. This is the first time, I think, I don't think any country that it currently exists anywhere in the world has ever done anything like this. This is like the, some grand social experiment of some kind. It's only happening in the United States and nowhere else. And no Democrat has ever countenanced anything like this.
So Vice President Harris is obviously bearing the brunt of a lot of the attacks when it comes to the border. Obviously, early on in her kind of when she pivoted from being the vice president to being the Democratic presumptive nominee, the whole whether she's the border czar or not was brought up as a kind of a point of contention. She maintained, I was assigned, you know, to tackle the root causes of migration from Guatemala, El Salvador, and Panama, right? I think, and trying to maintain that like narrow focus. What could a vice president do to kind of stem the flow of migrants? And to what extent do you feel that she did it and did as good a job as she could have?
Right. Well, I mean, I think we all know that the vice presidency has mainly just two powers, to break ties in the Senate and to be there in case they are needed to succeed the president. That's it. But but they can have other powers as are given to them. Look at Dick Cheney during the Bush administration. The president can appoint powers. And that's what happened in this case. The Biden administration came out with its central strategy, its essential main signature strategy for border policy, which they called root causes, to address root causes in three Central American countries that were major sending countries, that you'll rebuild those countries, nation build, so that eventually nobody would want to leave. That was the whole signature policy, and they put Kamala Harris in charge of it. She eagerly accepted it, at least publicly. She probably was not happy to have to do it, and held press conferences all along the way about, you know, all the progress she was making with this, that she'd gotten this corporation and that corporation to invest down there. And so pretty soon they'll stop coming. But of course, they never stop coming from those countries or from anywhere else, for that matter. There was no talk of nation building Haiti or nation building Venezuela or nation building the entire continent of Africa, all of whose people are coming. Because the root causes doctrine, it was a known failure before the Americans ever stole it from the Europeans. This had been a doctrine the Europeans had been doing for 35 years, since the early 1980s. And European study after European study showed that it was always a failure. It never worked, not one time ever. And yet we just took it and ran with it as like the central thing. So I can certainly understand why she would want to separate herself from what they did. In order to read her, forget about what she did as vice president. I think the main thing is to pay attention to how she campaigned when she was running for president in 2019 in the primaries. She has a platform. It's still online. No deportations, no detention. Safe, orderly, humane, root causes were in her platform, abolish ICE or, you know, start from scratch. She went with all of the most possible radical positions that you could ever have that has ever existed on border security in the United States. And it closely mirrored Biden's own. And she's never tried to reverse herself on any of those old policies. That they're not even that old. It was 2019, man.
Yeah. I mean, she attempted a rowback in the CNN interview on Thursday where she basically said, Dana Bash asked, you know, about various reversals on, you know, issues like fracking and I think brought up the abolishing ICE. And rather than, she basically, her defense was, my values haven't changed. But then she kind of has been adopting this strategy of basically briefing to friendly reporters that she no longer thinks those things, and those are just things that she said in the primary. Wouldn't it be quite difficult to take a presidential candidate seriously who doesn't believe anything that they believed 5 years ago?
Sorry to interrupt the show, but if you enjoy what we do here at Spectator TV, then why not subscribe to the magazine as well? If you subscribe today, you get 12 weeks for just £12, plus a free £20 John Lewis and Waitrose gift card. You can sign up at spectator.co.uk/TV offer.
Right. I think her strategy, and it's a good one, I can't blame them for doing this, is to avoid having to really explain your prior positions in a public way. For the next couple of months, all you have to do is avoid that. Don't talk about that, because I think the Democrats' primary goal in her, and what they see in her, the value in her, is that she's not Donald Trump. That's it. All she has to do is just not be him and not alienate too many people with what she really believes. She is a hard left, very liberal progressive from the most extreme fringes of the American political spectrum. That's where she's from. That's how she grew up. She's from San Francisco, man. So, that's her base. All she has to do is avoid saying that and appear to kind of be in the center, or more closer to the center than she really is, for a couple of months. She just has to do that for a couple months. And then once she's president, if she's president, all of that'll come out.
One of these stories, again, which I believe she was briefing to, or her people were briefing to friendlier media this week, was about the important role she played in Guatemala. I don't know, I think keeping a leader in power or preventing a kind of a political upheaval, which obviously from the surface level reads like your garden variety American hemisphere influence. Can you speak too much to that story, like what was going on in Guatemala and what effect she might have had on it?
I mean, Guatemala is, at least in terms of immigration, is a major transit country. It's a bottleneck country where the immigrants just simply are allowed to pass through. When Donald Trump was president, he told the Guatemalans, "Hey, I'm taking away all your money. We give you hundreds of millions of dollars. It's gone unless you comply with our policy of deporting your people back to your country, and you have to take them." And some other things. You can't let El Salvadorans through or Hondurans through, and you have to offer them asylum and that sort of thing. And the Biden-Harris government just immediately reversed all of that. It was working. It was fantastic for the border. I don't know what she's talking about. I just know that they gave the Guatemalans a total pass and let them revert back to their policy of just letting everybody pass through.
You've spent a fair bit of time and obviously written extensively about the Darien Gap, which I believe is the area like where Panama meets Colombia, right? Can you talk about that region, about why it's so significant to America when it comes to immigration, and what you can tell from being there and some of the things you learned on the ground?
Right. The Darien Gap is probably the most notorious and heavily trammeled migrant trail. And it's a bunch of footpaths, trails from Colombia into Panama. It is the bridge between South America and North America that funnels millions of people through it, especially now. It matters because that is a spot where any American administration can apply a chokehold and shut down a tremendous amount of the, not all of it, but a tremendous amount of the multinational immigration that is happening through there. And it brings with it, importantly, a major national security threat, in that you're bringing the people that are coming in from all the nations of the Middle East and Muslim majority nations all over the world, including hundreds of people who are on the FBI's terrorism watch list, right through that gap. So as long as it's open and people like that are crossing into the Americas, then it's the ultimate stranger danger. The reason I went there is because Panama, for the first time ever, elected a president who promised to close it, to shut down the Darien Gap. No Panamanian has ever done that. They just want to move them through. They provide the buses to move them through. Official policy is to just move them all through, all the way to Nicaragua. And all of a sudden now you have a president that wants to shut it down and is asking for the Biden-Harris administration to help. So I went down to see how that was going. And essentially what I found is that while there is a pause, because immigrants wait to see, wait, there's a new policy. What are they going to do? Are we going to get sent back? But ultimately it is increasing again because the Americans have refused to provide anything but the most paltry aid and assistance to the Panamanians to do what they need to close it, which is air deportations. So it just continues.
I was wondering if you could speak to, you know, when we talk about issues of migration and obviously, you know, detaining people, the common talking point that gets brought up is about, you know, how humane the conditions are in which people are either detained in or which they're staying in during the journey. I was wondering if you could kind of describe a bit of that as far as in the Darien Gap, and then also you refer to this Gaza-like situation in Mexico, and kind of what would the experience be like being there at the moment?
Right. Well, first of all, the Biden-Harris administration have invested very heavily in creating what they call, this is their term, safe, orderly, and humane passage through the Darien Gap. And they have worked and pressured or strong-armed, but certainly worked with the past Panamanian government to turn what was essentially a country lane through there into a massive superhighway that is shorter, safer, and more orderly, for sure. It used to be this terrible, treacherous 7-day, 10-day journey through, you know, robber-infested jungles. But now it's more like a 2-day hike. It's a camping trip for sure, a couple of nights. And it's now well patrolled by the Panamanians, so the robbers are kind of kept at bay, the rapists and all that. It's nowhere near nearly like it was. It's definitely safer, and that's why 550,000 people crossed through there last year alone, and another 500,000 are crossing right now through in 2024, compared to like 10,000 for the last 20 or 30 years. So it is, it's not what we are led to believe anymore. It's still a pain. You got to hike. And in Mexico, nobody's been down to southern Mexico to report what the Mexicans are doing. I was the first one to report. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. This is a complaint. Back in January, what the Mexicans were doing at the behest of the Biden administration, I like what they're doing. They should have been doing it for all of 3.5 years of the administration, but they only started doing it for the election optics for November 5. But you can read Mexican media showing that they are absolutely piled and stacked up down there in Tapachula and Villahermosa. The Mexicans are returning them to that zone and blocking them behind a wall of bureaucracy. You have to apply for this, you got to apply for that. It takes months and months. We're not letting you through. And they're holding the line so far. The American government very recently has decided to help the Mexicans build this massive facility down there to help process them in a way that they can fly directly over the U.S. border from down there, and that way avoid the optics of the illegal crossings. And it's under construction. You can see it in the Mexican media. This massive, it's the largest immigration processing facility in Mexican history being built down there in Tapachula right now to help the Mexicans relieve that pressure and their own domestic politics from that stem from that.
I want to quickly touch again on the idea of building the wall, which obviously when Trump first ran on it, he was kind of mocked because people thought that's too simple a solution to stopping illegal crossings into the US. Obviously, Kamala is now saying, I would sign this, you know, Lankford bill, which does apportion money, not a lot of money, but it apportions money to, once again, wall construction. To what extent is that the most effective way to address this specific problem of illegal crossings into the US?
Right. Well, walls definitely slow the flow. It doesn't stop, especially drug traffickers and really determined human smugglers from breaching it, finding ways over it, ladders and that sort of thing. But scenes that we're all used to seeing of just thousands and thousands of people walking right in and waiting for Border Patrol to process them would be less possible when there are walls close enough, but they have to have policy behind them, which are expulsion policies and deportation policies that go with the walls, so that when they get bunched up behind, we don't have to process them in, we can process them out. They get trapped behind the wall so that you can gather them up more easily and process them back into Mexico, which was what Trump was doing. And now, of course, all a wall is being used for is shade while they wait for the Border Patrol to come in. It's useful shade. It's hot out there. They can lean against it, too, and put their backpacks up against it. It's nice that way. But that's not the purpose of a wall. It's to slow it so that you can bunch them up and then deport them. That's how it's used. Now, the Lankford bill, what everybody's talking about with that, it just merely reinforces that there is a lot of money that Trump put aside and Congress appropriated for the completion of construction of the wall. And the Biden-Harris administration ended that immediately, shut that down. They could have been using that money with all the stacks of material. I've been there. I've wandered around. I've climbed up on top of these huge piles of steel down there that are just rotting and rusting in the sun out there. They could have done that at any time in the last 3.5 years that they're saying now all of a sudden, well, you know, we might extend the deadline for the use of that money, you know, is just political. I mean, it runs counter to everything that they have always said and preached from the pulpit loud and clear for the whole world to hear about their feelings about the wall, especially Kamala Harris's feelings about the wall.
And they did that because it was a, you know, it's a symbol of like Trump policy more than anything else, without necessarily thinking through, well, what are we going to do instead to solve this problem?
Yes. You know, listen, It's silly season. We're a couple months away from the election. All the Harris campaign has to do is just shut up from now until the election, and she's not Trump, and be nothing like Trump, and get a few of the independents. She's not that bad on Israel. She's not that bad on the border. She's saying kind of the rightish things for now, and maybe that'll get enough independents to push her over the mountain.
Finally, on the Democratic side of things with this issue, obviously the kind of pull quotes that you see most often are no kids in cages, right? And it's about no human is illegal and all of those things. And I think that, you know, Kamala seems fairly aware that that's where a lot of her party have been at for at least the last 5 years on this issue, though they may be coming around once they see what's happening in American cities. With regards to the sheer number of migrants, you know, posting up in hotels there. I'm wondering, to what extent do you think it's realistic that a Democratic administration under Kamala Harris, you know, enforces the deterrent part of the equation, which is what you say, you know, you need that in order to make it work?
Well, I think the 2022 midterms inform us a little bit about what they'll do if you know, in that election, the voters were polling, the likely voters were polling, you know, we hate what's happening at the border. We hate what you're doing at the border, and we're going to punish you for it. And the outcome of that election was that there was no punishment. The Democrats did very well, and the Republicans did far less well than everybody anticipated. And at one point, Biden was asked, well, you know, what are you going to do about the border now? And he said, well, the people have spoken. They like what we're doing. We're going to keep on keeping on. And so I think similarly that if Harris wins, they'll look at it like that. Well, they didn't punish us. They voted us in. That means that they don't mind it that much. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing. Her campaign, 2019 campaign platforms were on immigration, illegal immigration, were very, very similar. They mirrored those of Joe Biden. So I think we will see a mad onslaught, a stampede resume probably not long after November 5 if she wins, and certainly after Inauguration Day.
Do you think she can win Arizona, Nevada, and Texas?
I think she stands a chance. Not Texas.
That was a little trick at the end.
Yeah, there's no chance in Texas. But in a lot of the swing states, I mean, it's showing a dead heat. And that's 50-50 in my book.
Perfect. Todd, thanks so much.
That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Farrows, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.